Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Call our guest line during the live show and talk about wine on air. Dial area code 646-727-3235. From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on, and our phone lines are open. In the U.S., call 646-727-3235.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah. That's fantastic.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Toy Toy of Wine.
Fuller Vineyard.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wines.
Heber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Bebock Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
West Port Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry. Although, sometimes we do get off track.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
Belvoir Winery. I've heard voices at the winery.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
It's All About Wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, bus people. Why, it's such a beautiful day and evening here in sunny Florida, and they're out there and enjoying themselves and all that. Mike's not on with us tonight. I don't know why. Mike is usually right there, and he's, for some reason, he's not here. So you've got me, but you don't just have me alone. We have a guest tonight. Yay. So I'm going to, when we get ready for the guest, I'm going to have to go out and get him. Mike is usually my contact person for the guest, and he usually jumps out and gets them. So in a few minutes here, I'm going to give you some nice, soft, entertaining jazz while I jump out and try to get the guest online. Our guest tonight is from Flying Leap Vineyard. Give you a little background of why we are talking Flying Leap. Now, Flying Leap is not in Texas. Texas is our state we're on now. Haven't been able to get a hold of anyone from Texas, harvest, whatever reasons, but it's been tough. I get a little flyer, a little paper called Wine and Grape Grower. It's only been out for a couple of years. A great little magazine, well, not really a magazine, it's just, magazine is the best word for it. Some fantastic articles, some great information. I love it. Look forward to seeing it come out every time it comes out. But this month, they had a great article in there on Flying Leap Vineyard. Flying Leap Vineyard is in Arizona. And what one of the things that caught my eye is because it's in the area where we have talked to Elgin, Arizona, where we talked to or talked about. We haven't talked to him, and he will be on in the future. Keith Joshua Vineyards, I've visited him, I've seen him, I've talked with him, great guy, and he's right there at Elgin also. And these people also know Keith Joshua, but I saw the name and called him, and I said, look, you know, I do this program, I would love to have you on the program, love to have you spend some time with us talking about it and all that. They are rather new, a great background and all that. So we're going to talk to Mark Mueller, who is the vice president of Flying Leap Vineyard, in a few minutes here. Before I jump out and talk to him, though, I want to remind you, today is Cabernet Day. It is an international thing. If you do not have your bottle of Cabernet open and drinking it, you really should. Cabernet Day was started a number of years ago by 2010, by a guy by the name of Rick Backus. And he just started this, and it's now spread around the world. Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, either one of them works. For years, Cabernet Sauvignon was the most planted grape in the world. Merlot took over for a while. Cabernet is now back to number one. But while we're listening and talking to our guest, Cabernet Day today. So jump out there and open your bottle of Cabernet. And if you're listening to this on archives and you missed it, you can still enjoy your bottle of Cabernet. So that's Cabernet Day. I'm going to give you a little background music here for a while. I'm going to jump out and I'm going to try, hopefully I can do everything right and get a hold of our guest. So don't run away. We will our Portal Sellers, Los Angeles. Yeah, well, this is El Portal 1996 Cabernet Sauvignon is what I'm enjoying tonight. Before I leave you here, I just want to let you know my engineer brought this in, gave it to me to remind me what it was. I'm sitting here sipping on it, and I just wanted to be sure I passed it on. So enjoy a little bit of jazz. I will be back very soon here. All right, I'm back. Hope you enjoyed a little bit of the jazz there. But we have Mark from Flying Leap Vineyards on, and Mark will be joining us real soon. Flying Leap Vineyards, Mark's going to tell us all about Flying Leap Vineyard and everything about it and all that stuff. Hello, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Ron. Good to be with you.
Thank you for taking the time to join us tonight, too. I know it's a little scheduling conflict for you. You were saying that you're busy at this time of day. This is right around a little after 4 out there in Arizona.
Yeah, I have the luxury of not only having a full-time job as a winery and vineyard operator, but also I have an additional full-time job working at a medical center. So I have
full-time. Yeah. Your hands are full. Well, I was telling everybody before I got you on here, Flying Leap Vineyard, I'm familiar with that area of Arizona because I've met and I've talked to and became friends with Keith Joshua at Keith Joshua Vineyards. And when I looked at Wine and Grape Grower magazine and I noticed the article on you guys there and where you were located, I got all excited and I had to call and see if you can be on the program. So I'm glad you can join us. So I'm going to let you tell us about Flying Leap Vineyard, how it became, about you and your two partners, backgrounds, all sorts of stuff. I'm just going to let you talk.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we are, excuse me, we're located just down the road from Keith and Keith Joshua of Vineyards, between Keith and Kent Callaghan from Callaghan Vineyards.
Oh, really? I know right where you are.
In the heart of the Sonoyta AVA. and we're really pleased to have this location. In fact, we recently acquired the location from Tim and Joan Mueller, who were Canelo Hills Winery before they basically wanted to retire, and we basically had the good fortune to meet up with them, and we were able to take over their operation. And so now we have a great place to make our wines. We're developing our first harvest, 2013, from the vineyards that we have now in Sonoyta and also out in Cochise County out on the Kansas settlement. But originally, Mark Barras, Tom Kitchens, and I, Mark Muller, we were all classmates together at the Air Force Academy, so we've known each other almost 25 years.
Wow.
And we've always known that at some point after our military careers as pilots, we were going to get together and start a company, which is kind of a matter of what. And then we sort of took a look at where we wanted to live, and Arizona is just a great state. The Tucson area is a great location, and the Arizona wine industry is really underserved. So we thought that with our engineering backgrounds and our management backgrounds, as well as in our previous lives before the military, Mark had a background in farming and agriculture, and my extended family from Switzerland have been making wine for generations. So we thought these combinations of things would be good for us, as well as that there's a huge demand out there for locally produced Arizona wine. So it's a very, very underserved market. And there's just a lot of folks, great folks out there that are making great wines in Arizona. And I think we're really starting to come onto the winemaking map, so to speak. So we thought it was just a great fit all the way around for us.
What the name, Flying Leap? Why?
Yeah, it's actually kind of got a lot of different connotations. So the first is obviously that we're all former Air Force pilots, and so our logo sort of depicts that, and it's like a three-pointed logo that has an F and an L and a V in a Celtic knot kind of formation. So it symbolizes Mother Earth, from where the grapes come from, and it also symbolizes the three of us working together. And the other aspect of Flying Leap is that we love that notion, that Kierkegaardian notion of really taking, you know, a leap of faith and working together to fully commit to something. And so that's how the name sort of came together.
Fantastic. You all mentioned that you were in the Air Force before. Did all three of you retire from the Air Force?
Yeah, myself and Mark, we both retired. Mark retired about 5 years ago. He is a disabled veteran. I'm a veteran myself. I retired with just over 20 years of active duty service. And Tom spent about 11 years in the active duty and then was in the reserves for another close to 7 or 8 years. And he just recently left the reserves. So we all have an active duty flying background in the Air Force.
Oh, that is just too cool. Thank you for your service, all three of you, while we're on the topic of that. So the Flying Leap Vineyard, you took over another one. What did you have the vineyards, or did you take over the new vineyards, or what are you doing with vineyards?
Well, as we were first developing our plan, we knew that we wanted to grow locally, produce locally, and it takes a good 3 to 4 years to develop a vineyard. So that was pretty much the first step. And so back in 2010, we formed the business, and then in 2011 we began our first planting on 20 acres that we have out in the Kansas settlement. And we planted a number of different varietals: Grenache, Petit Verdot, Mourvèdre, Sangiovese, and Graciano, all varietals that are very suited to the Arizona southeast. So we really, and then over the next several years, we knew that we were going to further develop those vineyards, and then by the time we were going to have our first harvest, we were going to have a building in place where we could make the wines, or if we weren't that far along, we were going to hire custom crush facilities to do our wines for us, with us consulting with them. And as luck would have it, it was a little bit of serendipity. Canelo Hills came on the market, and we immediately jumped at the chance to have a wonderful location in the middle of the Sonoyta AVA. So now we have not only vineyards in the Kansas settlement, but we've also got vineyards in the Sonoyta AVA. So we're very, very happy about that.
I lost my thought there. You mentioned something about the grapes, and I lost my thought. The grapes that you're planting in the area you are, tell us about the climate and the elevation and all that. I know the area, and I know that you go to Tucson, and it's like 25 degrees hotter than it is up where you are. So explain to us your little area there, what it's like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I'll describe the Sonoyta area first of all. Sonoyta is located about 5,000 feet above sea level. When you drive out to Sonoyta along 83 out of Tucson, it's a very, very beautiful drive. It takes you through beautiful hills, rolling grasslands with mountains all around. And when you get to Sonoyta, you're looking at this time of year, July, August, you're looking at a good 15 to 20 degrees cooler than the Tucson area, and certainly well over 20 degrees cooler than the Phoenix area. So it's a really great place to escape the heat from the cities, from the two major cities. And there are a lot of bed and breakfasts, camping opportunities and restaurants in that area, as well as I'd say there are about 10 or 12 different winery establishments and vineyards out there that are all easily accessible from the Sonoyta area. So that's one wonderful thing about Sonoyta. The other nice thing about the Sonoyta and the Cochise areas are that the climates there simulate very closely the southern France, northern Spain areas, where you have hot days, hot sunny days, but yet relatively cool nights, which are actually quite ideal conditions for grapes. So we did a lot of research on what types of varietals do well out there. Like I said, Grenache, Graciano do very well. We're also very fortunate in Sonoyta to have Syrah and Tempranillo, another Spanish grape, and also everyone's favorite Cabernet Sauvignon. So we're very happy about where we're located. Wilcox is a little bit lower in elevation, about 4,200 feet, so we don't have as severe frost problems out there, and we're kind of on a gentle downslope from the Chiricahuas. So it's a nice combination to have both of those two vineyards, because if one has some severe climatological issues one year, we would not essentially lose an entire crop or a portion of our crop in one year because we'd have that other vineyard to feed from and to make our wines. So it's a very nice combination.
Fantastic. You mentioned Cabernet Sauvignon. Did you? I was telling the audience before I brought you on that today is Cabernet Day, you know.
Actually, I did not know that.
Yeah,
that's good to know.
August 29th, Cabernet Day, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, whatever. But yeah, it started in 2010. Now it's spread around the world. So,
that's interesting. Probably a celebration of combining those two wonderful varietals into another one.
they are great too. Yeah. The Cochise and the Sonoyta areas, the winter highs and lows and summer highs and lows. What temperatures do you usually hit on those?
Well, let's see. I would say that out in the Kansas settlement in Cochise County, you're looking at summer highs of around maybe 100, 105 degrees.
Wow.
And then summer lows in the evenings, it can cool off into the 60s and 70s. During the winter time, you get a nice, consistent and cold winter, which is actually very good for the vines. It's good for them to go dormant and then have that consistent low temperature, and it stays that way pretty much until bud break. And then you have a couple frost scares, but there are frost mitigation controls that you can use during the months of April and May when you're worried about that. But the temperatures don't get so cold like they do in some other portions of the United States, where you actually have to worry about the vines dying because of the actual trunks splitting apart due to the cold. So it's cold, but it's not too cold. In Sonoyta, you're looking at probably maybe 5 to 10 degrees cooler off of the highs and the lows from the Kansas settlement. So pretty ideal conditions for growing grapes, actually.
It is. What type of soil do you have in the, there that you got all that planted in?
It's a sandy loam mixture, good drainage with caliche under the sandy loam. So you've got relatively hard soil underneath, and the roots definitely work their way through that, and then the plants become viable, and they do really well. We do have some calcium issues. We do have to control for soil pH, but that's a relatively minor effort. For the most part,
Water, is that ever an issue with you? Do you have to water? What type of system do you use in watering?
Yeah, we're really fortunate at both of our vineyards to have two very, very deep wells that are fed by natural aquifers, subterranean aquifers, and the water that comes out of these wells is just absolutely fantastic. My friend Mark and I, or my partner Mark and I, we consistently joke about just bottling the water straight out of the well and selling it because it's such good water. You do have to worry a little bit about the pH of the water, and we definitely adjust for that. But for the most part, it's great. And a lot of people ask about that too. I mean, we do live in desert conditions, so the plants absolutely have to be irrigated, unlike a lot of places in California and France where they do dry irrigation. So,
do you use a drip system?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We use a drip system.
Mm-hmm. When do you get, you mentioned bud break. When is bud break usually?
Well, it certainly depends on the varietal. We try to plant varietals that are a little bit later in bud break, a little bit later, just because of the spring frosts that we have to contend with. But then at the same time, you also kind of want to plant grapes that you like and that also do well in that climate. So I would say, gosh, anywhere from late February until end of April, even early May. So you've got a really wide range of bud break for the different varietals that are grown out here by the different viticulturalists.
Late February, that's early. Wow. That's
they can come out and surprise you if you're not ready.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And then harvest, are you doing it now, or is it done, or what's going on with harvest?
Well, right now, it's an interesting year this year, actually, because we harvested Grenache and Graciano out at our Wilcox farm about 11 days ago, and those ferments are almost complete, and we're really happy about the quality of the fruit. However, since then, we haven't harvested anything. I think some of that has to do with the large amount of rain that we've been getting out of both fields. So you have to, so the bricks isn't coming up as high as we want, as fast as we want. And so we just have to keep a daily eye on what's going on out there. And then if the fruit has been on the vine too long, we may very well have to harvest at lower bricks levels this year, but that certainly beats not having, high quality fruit.
Well, you mentioned bricks. What are you looking for in bricks? What is normal for that area on your bricks?
Well, there's been a lot of debate over the years about, when to harvest what. Obviously, 30 years ago, bricks levels were typically lower during harvest, and then just the general palate of the folks in the country that consume wine kind of leaned more towards those higher bricks levels, 25, 26, and even higher. However, there's a balance that you have to strike every single year when you're harvesting. So it's not just a matter of looking at the bricks and going, okay, hey, it's 25. We like the number 25. But you also have to look at what your pH is and what your titratable acidities are doing. You have to see what the acids are in the grapes as well, because you want a well-balanced wine. And if you get one, and if you have a grape that's got a lot of one but not a lot of another, you're going to have to do additions, and that doesn't necessarily lead to a good, well-balanced wine. So it's you don't really have a target per se. You just have to kind of look at a lot of different factors.
Yeah, I know, and you, and it's a pain trying to balance everything out. I face that every once in a while myself, so I know what you're talking about.
It's quite a challenge, but it's fun too because you get to interact with the vineyard, you get to interact with the folks that are working out there, and it's just a really exciting time. And every year it's different, obviously, and the picking and the processing of the grapes and making the wine and figuring out what you need to do to make a good wine. It's always just a little bit different every year. A couple of years ago, we got something of botrycized Grenache from a vendor, and we had to deal with that. We experimented with like a very hot fermentation and with the addition of tannins and use of lysozyme. And, we ended up coming out with some really great wine. So you just have to kind of adjust and adapt and keep your eye on the target.
Yeah, and that's really, and you're right. It's the fun part of it too, trying to come up with that. Range. You mentioned that you were getting a lot of range right now. Is that unusual? I mean, I know that area goes through their monsoons, but is this late in the season?
It's not terribly unusual. It's just that we would like to see more of a break between the rains. So I think we're getting a lot of rain in succession. A few years ago, we had a huge hailstorm come through and wipe out most of the Sonoyta vineyard. That was in 2010, and that took place on the 15th of August. So we're definitely not out of the danger zone yet. We just are really looking forward to a good 6-7 day stretch where we've got sunny skies so that we can go out there and do some good sampling and see where it goes.
Rains, when is your monsoons? I know you referred to them down there as your monsoons. When is your big rainy season?
It actually takes place over about 3 months. You'll start seeing the rains coming in the middle of June. So you have middle of June all the way through the end of August, beginning of September typically, or when you have your highest rains. In fact, I'm looking out the window right now, and believe it or not, we have almost 100% overcast skies here in Tucson. So it's kind of a nice respite. It's not 100 degrees outside. It's only about 85 degrees outside, so it's kind of nice.
Wow. That cools it off well. Well, that seems like a very difficult time to get your rain pattern, though, because that's when you're trying to develop grapes without a bunch of moisture, a bunch of water. Does that affect it, or have you noticed any difference?
It's absolutely a factor, and you just have to kind of deal with what Mother Nature serves you, and you have to kind of, like I said before, just kind of keep your eye on the target. Check those weather patterns, and it's been done before. But hey, if you're sitting at 23 bricks and you were shooting for 25 this year because you wanted to do a certain thing with the wine, but you've got rain forecast for the next 3 or 4 days, it's it might be time to pick today instead of waiting four days. So
that's
right.
Suck it in. Go out and get them off the vine. That's Your acreage. How many? What do you have planted, and how many acres approximately of each?
So right now we have, it's a little bit difficult to say, well, it's not difficult to say, we don't know, but we have a lot of different varietals. In 2011, we planted Grenache, Graciano, Mavedra, Petit Verdot, and Sangiovese out at our Block 1 farm in the Kansas settlement out in Cochise County, near the town of Wilcox. And then in 2012, we planted Tanat and then all of our white varietals. So we have Viognier, Picpoul, Marsan, Malvasia, and Grenache Blanc. So we're very happy about those varietals, and we're looking forward to our first white harvest in 2014. Now, out in Sonoyta, we're just fortunate that Tim and Joan planted a few varietals that we didn't have out in Wilcox. Like I said, Tempranillo, Syrah, and Cabernet Sauvignon, as well as a small planting of Malvasia And then we've had to replant several vines this year, so we planted a lot of Graciano out in the Sonoyta vineyard as well.
Does the fact that Sonoyta is an AVA and the Cochise not influence you on what you're planting and where?
It doesn't really affect the varietals that we're planting per se. I think that, I know that that Cochise County is in the middle of its AVA application process, and some folks that have been in the industry here a lot longer than we have, Keeling Schaefer, for example, those guys are spearheading the Cochise AVA, so we're really happy about that. It's nice to be able to have a community of wine growers and winemakers that source their fruit and do estate wines from a particular area, and that area is really is unique when you look at all of the different factors that are associated with the concept of terroir. So we're pretty excited about having that Cochise AVA being approved hopefully in the near future.
I hadn't heard that was being done. That is nice. I'm glad to hear that they are doing that, because I know the Cochise area is unique in itself. I am familiar with the area, and I'm glad to hear that they are trying to get an AVA designation on that. Let's move into the vineyard or into the winery. We've talked about grapes. Let's talk about the winery itself. Are you using stainless steel, using plastic, oak? What is it that you're aging in the man and doing everything?
We are typically using oak for our reds, and we are using either a stainless steel or the flex tank system for our whites and rosés. But that's not necessarily a hard and fast rule. If we do a white wine, for example, that we may want to use as a blending wine to secure the color a little bit more from a red wine that doesn't have a lot of color, we might want to go ahead and age that in oak barrels. I know that in the past, winemakers have used Viognier to firm up the color retention for some lighter grapes, maybe such as Sangiovese. So it sort of just really depends on what we're doing, and sometimes we don't even have a choice of what we do because of the amount of space, and the amount of room, and the amount of storage containers that we have. Sometimes, if we wanted to age something in a particular barrel, you know, we might not be able to do that just because of just purely logistical reasons. But as we grow and as we develop into a larger space, which we're planning on building a barrel house next to our current facility, we'll have a lot more space and we'll have a lot more storage options. But it is always a very high level of work and thought goes into how you're going to move what into what positions and really organizing the winery. It's always a challenge.
What type of oak are you using? French, American, European? What?
We actually have French, Hungarian, and American oak. And it's really nice for when we do barrel tastings as well, because sometimes we'll have a couple we'll have a varietal that's aging in two different types of oak that are, let's say, both 1 year or both 2 year barrels. And when you taste that wine, you can really taste the difference in the oak. And so a lot of people are really surprised by that, and they really enjoy making that discovery. And I'm not as far along in the winemaking process as some other folks are that have been doing it for a while. And so we are experimenting with lots of different oak and lots of different varietals. But the bottom line is that at the end of the process, the wines that come out of them are always very, very unique and very good tasting wines. So we're really happy about that.
That really is the key to it, too. You mentioned that barrel tasting, all that. I always bring, I teach a class a couple times a month, and one of the things I always bring up is if anyone gets an opportunity to do a barrel tasting, jump on it. It is so unique and so exciting and so different to be able to do barrel tastings and see the wine when it is so raw, basically, before it really starts coming into its own in the bottle and all. So I'm glad to see that you're offering that. That's a great extra thing to give your people that come in.
It really is. It's astonishing how much the juice and the must change from the initial stages all the way to bottling, and then even after bottling as well. So we encourage people to when they taste wines to write down notes and keep their notes. And for example, if they try one of our wines in the barrels, write down what their perceptions are of the wine. And then after that wine goes to the bottle, try it again. And what are your perceptions? How has that wine changed? And what are your thoughts about it now? And I know it's difficult sometimes, like 6 months later, to revisit the wine. But after you practice drinking and tasting wine for many, many years, you sort of develop a palate. You sort of develop an idea and a sense for how things develop. And I guess it's just like anything else. You're using your brain, muscle memory if you're an athlete, and the same thing goes with your nose and with your palate. I find that to be very interesting, and I think there's a lot of people that are sort of taken aback by drinking wine and maybe thinking that it's just, there's just way too much out there and it's way too overwhelming. All I can say is that it does take many, many years to sort of develop your taste for what you like and being able to notice and sense those differences as a wine ages, from the barrel all the way into when it's been in the bottle for up to 10 years or longer.
And that, reiterate on that same thought, I have I recommend that highly to people, and I found that that's so true, that if you have a chance to do a barrel tasting, it shows the wine young and how a little bit of age in the bottle can really bring out the maturity and the complexity just by sitting there for a while and presenting itself later. That's great, though. I love that you do offer the barrel tastings. A lot of places don't. It's a great chance to taste a young, undeveloped wine. The oak, I want to mention one thing to you. I've talked to quite a few wineries around the country and all that. Minnesota oak, I don't know if you're using it yet or not, but I've had lots of wineries say that they're getting great results with Minnesota oak. Just FYI,
We are certainly not above trying something like that. That sounds really interesting. I mean, one of the mottos or one of the key things in our vision for our company and our mission statement is that we want to be able to educate folks in a way that I think is fun for them, and to really just get to know wine and explore wine. And that extends to us, the winemakers, and the farmers, as well as to the whole company. So when we love continuing the educational process, and when somebody has an idea such as Minnesota oak, why not leave the door open for that and give that a try? So we just love that philosophy of being able to, like, when somebody comes in through our doors into the winery, we greet everybody and we say hi. And we bring them in, and we start talking about wines, and we start talking about what we're doing. And invariably, when folks leave, the winery, they've had a good experience, and they've learned a little something about wine, we think. And then, and that extends, like I just said, to us as well. So thanks for that. Thanks for that tip.
Well, like I said, I've talked to quite a few, and they're people are getting great results from Minnesota oak. So it's something to check out. Are you on a wine trail there?
Yeah, we're on the Sonoyta Wine Trail. That's right. The maps are available online. We are in the middle of re-establishing and revamping our website, but at some point that map will be on our website too, flyingleapvineyards.com. But there are definitely a lot of wineries to choose from, and with offering a lot of different blends and varietals. So it's very unique and a very diverse area that we have.
Let's talk quickly about the government, the state and federal. Do you love them? Do you hate them? Want to hug them? Want to kill them?
Wow. You're going to get me in trouble here, Ron. I tell you what, I'm not going to be shy about saying it, but government rules and regulations are one of the biggest detriments to successfully starting and running a company. And I don't say that lightly. I probably spend about 30 hours a month just complying with state and local and federal regulations.
Mm-hmm.
From everything to licensing for events, to renewing licenses, to taxes, to excise taxes, to winery operations. It's in my opinion, we haven't really left prohibition. I mean, the 1920s are still alive and well, in my opinion.
freethegrapes.org. I don't know if you're familiar with that site, but freethegrapes.org has been fighting the prohibition concept for quite a few years.
You can't just be. You can't just have a position on the extreme left or the extreme right, because there are a lot of different areas and facets to the problem. For example, do I enjoy having to deal with all of these regulations? No, of course not. I don't think any business owner does. But then again, I also don't like the idea of folks that potentially could buy bulk wine from anywhere in the world and bottle it and put a label on it and call it Arizona wine, for example. I don't like the notion of that either. So I do acknowledge the need for a governing body, and I think that can and does help smaller growers like ourselves, and even the bigger growers as well. I think having that that element on the bottles, like I always encourage people to read bottles. Hey, take a look and see what it says. If it says, produced and bottled by, that means that they didn't grow their own grapes. If it says estate bottled, that those grapes were raised and that the wine was made from those grapes and bottled in the winery here at the estate. So I always encourage people to read the labels and see what they're actually buying, because wine isn't cheap. A good wine, you're going to spend $20 to $50 for an ultra premium bottle of wine. And I think before you spend that money, it behooves the consumer to kind of take a look and see what they're buying.
And you're absolutely right. I can't agree with you more on that. And there's, without the regulations, no telling what's going to happen. And but the thing is, too, some of the regulations get a little bit overboard. And you want to say, hey, enough is enough. We know what we're doing. You don't need to regulate us to the point, because we do know what we're doing. And that's the part that I think I take issue with on that. So
it's a difficult pill to swallow sometimes. That's for sure.
Yeah, so we all face, everybody in the business faces those government regulations, I'm afraid. How about shipping? Can you ship out of state?
That's also a really good question, and it harkens back to those prohibition days where the regulations were so onerous that you couldn't even purchase or make alcohol. Some of those restrictions have been lifted, but a lot of those remnants from the 20s are still with us. There are a lot of states that we can ship to. There are some states that we can't ship to. It's just going to be a process that we're going to have to develop as we grow and mature. Because with shipping to another state, you incur additional costs as far as regulatory costs. For example, you have to keep track of everything you're shipping out of state, and you have to do tax returns for states that you ship to, and you have to keep all that stuff straightened out with the accounting and with the books and with taxes and everything. So currently As the requests come in for our wine, we take a look at those and we sort of build on what we've done in the past, and then we're probably at some point going to go with a company that that can facilitate those types of transactions. We ship pretty much anywhere in Arizona all year round. Most wineries in Arizona they don't ship during the summer months because it gets very hot here, and it's definitely not a good idea to transport wine when it's hot. But we have a special arrangement with a third party that we can keep those wines cool, and we can get them out to anybody in Arizona that wants them. So anyway, that's kind of a long answer to your question, but it's just sort of on a case by case basis right now for us.
Yeah, with all the states and all the regulations they have in all the different states, that's the long answer. Is the only way you can answer that, though. It's just so many rules and regulations out there.
It's prohibitive. I mean, ideally, I'd like to be able to send wine to any state, just put it in a box and mail it out to them. And, you know, if we have to, pay, you know, the state taxes for doing business in that state, you know, that's fine. But, you have some states where, like, every state is different. That's I guess what my point is. My point is that it's not easy, and it's in fact it's so difficult that there are several third party vendors out there that literally their entire business model is to streamline the process to be able to ship wines from one state to another, and I find that to be quite defeating the purpose, so to speak, that a company out there has to exist just so that you can figure out how to navigate your way through all of the different state and federal regulations that are out there. I just find that to be astonishing.
And really sad. It's really sad that that has to be done that way. Your wines, I've been looking at your website. I pulled it up and looked at it today and all that. I'm not seeing a list of your wines. Are you not actually ready to sell yet?
Our store is, you can navigate to our store, and all the wines are listed there. And like I said before, we are in the middle of developing a more comprehensive and user-friendly, user-informative website where we're going to put more information about, things to do in the vicinity of where our locations are, putting in a wine library, and just making a really good place to go for consumers to, like, learn about wine, learn about who we are and what we have. So, yeah, that's still under development. But right now you'll be able to see all the wines that we have for sale through our store.
Uh-huh. Okay. I pull it up here. I see them. They're all listed here. I noticed one thing too on your site, which I thought was great, was the card that you're offering, and I was checking that out. The Arizona wine card, I think the Arizona wine travel card.
I believe it's called the wine card or the wine travel card. Yeah, that's a great way to for people that like to explore the different wineries that are out there. To get some really nice discounts. The way it works is that all of the wineries in Arizona choose whether or not they want to participate in the system that has been established by a local business owner here, and he travels around to all the wineries and he gets them to sign up for the card, and he's really passionate about what he does. He's a great guy. His name escapes me, unfortunately, but so the participating winery will basically sign up to so that their name will be on the card, and then when a customer that buys the card comes in, every winery has some kind of a different deal that they're offering. Like one winery might offer a case price, i.e. 10% off on any wine purchase. Another winery might offer free tastings with the presentation of the card, and the card costs $20, and you can pretty much, make that $20 up easily just within, with visiting just one or two wineries, and then the card is good for a whole year. So it's a really great way to explore different wineries that are out there and to get a lot of savings, actually. It's a really, really good program.
I was reading about it is, and it, not just wineries, but it's, you know, if you're traveling to Arizona, it's a great thing to pick up because it gives you discounts on hotels and food and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it just, you can plan your vacation around that and make some major savings, and it guides you right to them. So it is a good thing. I like that. I want to talk a question. Yummy Zen, red dessert wine. Okay, tell me about your Yummy Zen. Now, Zinfandel is either pink or it's red, but a yummy dessert wine, explain that to me.
Well, I think the yummy part of that, the name for that wine, you know, sort of gets people's mouths salivating. But it's basically just a it's a dessert wine that so the way we make our dessert wines, or the way that dessert wines or ports are typically made, is by you know, arresting the fermentation at a predefined level of sugar. So you'll retain an awful lot of sweetness in the wine, and then you'll fortify that wine with grape spirits, and then you basically fortify the wine up to a certain percentage, let's say 18%. And so you've got an alcohol-rich wine, but also a wine that's really sweet, so that you can taste some of the sweeter characteristics of the berries, you know, before they've been fermented to dryness. So it's just incredible how many different types of things that you can do with wines. You know, rosés, you know, the length of the time that you macerate on the skins, the length of the time that you ferment. You know, how much sugar is retained in the grape when you're before you put it into the bottle, not to mention champagnes, and it just goes on and on. It's that's what's so fascinating about wine, is there are so many different ways to make it, and there are 8,000 different varietals out there in the world. And so you can literally drink a different wine every day of your life and never even have tried a fraction of what's out there. So that's what's so amazing about it.
And the fun part is doing that.
Sometimes it's a little bit overwhelming, because sometimes having too many choices is, stops people from acting. So you just, at some point, you just have to say, okay, you know what? This year, this is what feels right to me. The way the grapes came in, the condition that they're in. You know, this is what we're going to do this year, and we're going to see how it turns out. And then, you know, if you're a big winery like, you know, Behringer or something like that, you can reproduce that every single year. For a smaller winery that maybe doesn't have, you know, the labs and equipment that some of the big boys have, you know, you may not be able to reproduce that necessarily because of, you know, growing conditions and just a lot of different factors. So that's one thing that I really love about small winemakers and our community and a lot of communities all over the country. I mean, every state in the union has a winery, at least one winery. I found that to be a really interesting fact. They might not necessarily grow their grapes in that state, but they do. But every state does have at least one winery that produces wine. And so when you get out there and you start exploring all of these different smaller wineries, you're going to find a lot of variety. You're going to find a lot of varietals and a lot of different tastes out there. And a lot of different winemakers that have different palates and do different things. And so I always encourage people to, you know, really try to focus on, you know, if they really want to explore and try new things and find new varietals and to really go out and explore those smaller wineries that are making their own wine and that are growing their own grapes. That's really where it's at.
And it makes a big, big difference when you go around the country, too. You can tell on some of these wineries, the pride that they feel about growing their own grapes and making their own wine. I want to ask you one question here before we get toward the end here. Your Wilcox Tasting Room and Art Gallery, the building you're in, I understand that has quite a little history in it. You'd like to talk about that for a second?
Oh, sure, yeah. I don't know too much about it. I just know what it says on the plaque that's outside of our historical building there. Go ahead, Ron. Sorry.
No, I just tell us about it. Tell us about what the plaque says about the building.
Oh, I believe that place was a saloon at one point way back in the early or the late 1800s and early 1900s, and Warren Earp, I guess the brother of Wyatt Earp, was famously gunned down there. So that's a little bit of historical context for you for that building. So it's been around for a really long time. We have a great landlord that we're working with, who has allowed us to go into his space and to rework the hardwood floors and put some art up on the walls and just make it a really, really wonderful, cozy space to look at art and to try some really great wines. We're really, really happy about the way it turned out. We just opened in May of this year, so it hasn't been open that long, but we've got some great response.
That sounds like a nice place. That's always fun. Arizona's got a lot of that old west charm to it, and that's nice that you're all a part of it. Any other comments before I let you go here? And if you have none, then all the information, how people can get a hold of you, where you are, your hours, website, blog, and speaking of blog, you guys need to catch up on that. It's been a while since you posted. And
thanks for noticing, Ron. You're absolutely right. We just recently got together with one of these email marketing platforms where we essentially have sort of taken a lot of the time and effort that we put into our blog and we put it into newsletters that we send out to folks. And we just are kind of getting used to that and really enjoying that medium. But people can sign up on our website. So they can sign up when they come into our wineries for a newsletter. And we encourage people to go to our website and kind of see what we're doing. We definitely do have to put another blog posting in there once things kind of calm down a little bit during the harvest and winemaking season. But one great thing about our website, and a lot of folks do this, so I'm not going to say that we're the only ones that do that, but my partner Mark has a real passion for, like I said earlier in the program, getting folks educated out there, really telling our story and telling people what we're doing out there and some of the trials and tribulations that we're facing. And I think it makes for a really good and interesting read, and we complement that with photographs on our website. So we're really happy about that. But you can reach us at www.flyingleapvineyards.com. And our tasting rooms are located in Willcox, Arizona, and Elgin, Arizona, which is in the Sonoyta AVA. And we're typically open Wednesday through Sunday from 11 to 4. Willcox, we're now open 7 days a week. And for all you Arizona Bisbee fans out there, we're going to be opening up a tasting room in Bisbee as well. Bisbee is a wonderful, wonderful little town, a great, great group of folks that live out there. It's a very fun and eclectic community with a lot of artists, and it's just a great walking town. And we're really happy that the folks at Bisbee are opening up their arms to us and allowing us in there to open up what I believe is the first tasting room in the town. So we're really looking forward to that. We're hoping that opening is going to be sometime in either late September or early October.
Soon. Great.
Yeah. It's come on out and visit Arizona, Napazona, people are starting to call it. And there's a lot of really great wines out here, a lot of great winemakers. It's a great community. And we can't tell you the positive response that we've had from all the folks that have come in to visit us, and the positive comments that we get from folks about all the wineries that they visited in Arizona. So it's just a really great community, and I'm really, really proud and happy to be a part of it. And I'm so thankful that we landed here in Arizona and we're making it happen. So.
It is a great area there. I have a son, a daughter-in-law, and a grandbaby, a granddaughter, and a new grandson coming, within a couple of weeks, that live in Tucson. So I probably will be down there, and when I do, I will make a trip down, and we can meet, and I'd love to try some of your wines and talk to you in person. I will look forward to that day. It will happen. So, thank you.
Yeah,
so much.
I absolutely look forward to it too, Ron. I'm looking forward to meeting you, and I appreciate you having me on your program.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us about Flying Leaf Vineyards and Arizona Wines. Very informative, a lot of fun, and the best of luck to you, and I look forward to the day that we can shake hands.
Likewise. You're welcome. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Good night now.
Good night.
All right. And that was Mark Mueller from Flying Leaf Vineyards in Arizona. And so thank you, Mark, again, for the time, taking time to visit with us and all that. Great interview. That was a lot of fun and a lot of information there. By all means, check out their website, flyingleapvineyards.com. A lot of stuff. Great pictures on there. Some beautiful pictures of their vineyards are posted on there. A lot of interesting stuff. So check out the website. It has all the information, also how to get in touch with them and the wines, and tells about Mark and Ralph. So all three of them are listed on their biographies of all three of them, and the wine shop and all the wines and everything. So except their blog and their little behind on that, but you know, he said he'll get it caught up. So check that all out. And again, thank you, Mark, for taking time to come on and visit with us tonight and tell us all about Flying Leaf Vineyard. We got my engineer here is trying to point out something to me, and I'm sure. Oh no, she wants to play the video game. No. this weekend we have a festival at the winery. We talked about these before. We have another one this weekend. A bunch of guests and not guests, but a bunch of vendors will be there, as will Sam. He does a great job. Sam's always loved by everyone. He does an excellent job in entertaining all of us. And we'll be doing wine tastings all day. We will be doing all sorts of things happening. So when you let me see. I'm trying to pull up something here so I can tell you who our vendors are going to be. And I'm still wrong one there. Here we go. Okay, now, it's not ready yet, I don't think. Nope. Oh, there it goes. Okay, nope, look at that. It's giving me all sorts of weird stuff. I'll let you know who the vendors are here in just a second, I think, as soon as my engineer here can find what she's looking for. But this... this Saturday from 11 to 4. And if you are looking at a time to come and visit us, you're not in town, you're going to be in Florida, next Saturday we have a great event coming up called Grandma's Girls. These are a bunch of women who help other women who are going through breast cancer and chemo and all that stuff to face that, and with wigs and different stuff for them. So that's something coming up next Saturday. And then on the first Saturday of October, we have the Pasco Pet Fest, which we have lots of vendors on that one, over 40 vendors coming out for that one. So there's a couple things for the future. But this week, Boxer and Christy will be there with Flame Rock oil candles and polished oil candles, polished agate oil candles, tea light holders, all sorts of cool stuff. Believe me, these things are really, really nice, and they sell a lot of them. They're reasonably priced. It's nice gifts and all that. Speaking of nice gifts, I have to point out that coming up on the 8th, which is a week from this Sunday, is Grandparents' Day. So keep that in mind. Get yourself out there. Don't forget grandparents' wine. Always a good gift. Always a good gift. Jamie with Organo Gold, the healthy coffee, will be back again. 100% certified Ganoderma lucidum. I shouldn't have tried to read that because I probably pronounced it wrong. A great coffee. She comes out and she makes some coffee, and you can taste it, and it's really a fantastic coffee, and then you can get some to take home with you. Raffle Rescue, a great group. I love Raffle Rescue. These people are really fantastic. They help people keep pets in their home. When you lose a job and it's a choice between having to choose between feeding your pet or feeding your family, your pet is usually the one that loses. Raffle Rescue will come in and help feed your pet, vet bills, whatever, so that you can keep your pet until you get back on your feet. This weekend, this Saturday at 4 o'clock, there will be a drawing for their raffle, for their latest raffle. This is Going Green with Bissell. It is a whole bunch of cleaning supplies and everything for pet cleanup, and including the Bissell vacuum cleaner and a bunch of cool stuff. So come out. Tickets are cheap for the drawing. Come out. Get your tickets. Win yourself a raffle. Big Mama Donna's barbecue sauce will be there. She has a hot mild blueberry and a blueberry mild barbecue sauce. That's interesting. I haven't tasted those yet, so I'm looking forward to trying some of that myself. She will be there giving you samples and having her all of her ware for sale. Christine will have origami owl living lockets and wine charms, just cute lockets and wine charms and all that. You can check that out. Mitch's business is named Mitch. Is a new in Paradise Lost and Found. He sells jewelry, handcrafted, and closed-out health and beauty items. Heather will be back again with Hot Sweets Shack. It's she offers jellies, jams, cookies, breads, spice mixes, soup mixes, candies. Great stuff. I've had it in the past, and it's fantastic. Stephanie of Premier Designs Jeweler will be back with some high-quality, high-fashion, but affordable jewelry. And then, obviously, we will have a great day out here. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be no rain. They're saying less than 20% chance of rain. Supposed to be a gorgeous day, a perfect day in paradise to come and visit the winery and the vendors and just have yourself a pleasant time. Enjoy a glass of wine and walk around, visit vendors, and just have some a quiet, relaxing day. So that is coming up this Saturday. Like I say, we got a couple of others. If you'd like to sign up for the winery e-letter, we send it out a couple times a month before our festivals, keep you informed of what's going on here. You can always go to the winery website at www.floridaestateswines.com and check out the website and sign up for the e-letter, and we'll put you on our list and keep you informed of all this stuff. Interesting e-letter. It's got recipes in there. It's got some wine trivia, wine facts. It tells about the class I teach. It tells a little opening and stuff like that. So pop in on the website, check it out. Also, All About Wine, BTR.com. That's our website here at the radio program. You can sign if you have anything you want to pass on to me, anything you want to tell me, any suggestions for the programs, any of that stuff, you can email me at allaboutwinebtr.com that's not our email. That's our website. You can email me at allaboutwine101. At gmail.com. That is the email address, allaboutwine101 at gmail.com. So let me know if you have any questions or any suggestions for programs, or if you want to be a guest, or if you know somebody who wants to be a guest and they don't want to get in touch with me, and I'll call them. And just let me know. Get in touch with me. Next week, I don't think we're going to have a program. I have bottling to do. I thought it was going to be this week. It wasn't. It's going to be next week, so I'm not going to be here. I don't know if Mike's going to be on or if we're going to have a show or not. I'm surprised Mike wasn't here this evening. I don't know. I hope nothing is wrong. But next week, there'll be no program. I'll be busy and bawling. But Mike might pop on the best of or something like that in a past show. Yeah, and if you have any suggestions, again, let me know. I'll be happy to check it out and let you know what's going on. So, again, don't forget, today is Cabernet Day. So if you're listening to this live Thursday on August the 29th, it is Cabernet Day. If you're listening to it on archives, then have a bottle or a glass of Cabernet anyway. Hey, that's what it's for, to drink. And then next week, September the 5th, there'll be no show. Don't forget, be safe out there on Labor Day. That's Monday. And Grandparents' Day on September the 8th is coming up. So be prepared for that. And then moving into September, we're already getting toward autumn. I can feel the chill in the air already. moving into September and in autumn. So we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Thanks for tuning in. As always, we enjoy you listening to it, and we will see you in a couple of weeks. Whoops, is that the one I want? I'm trying to find the closing I want. Oh, here it is. So, thanks a lot. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flewn.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
He just had brain fart.